You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Everybody, it's September 27th, year of our Lord 2019. We're in the live stream. Hopefully I'm coming through okay. I'm mobile and I'm waiting for Remote 44, a new member, to click on over and say hello. Let me just move him over. Hello, Remote 44.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm real well. Did you just say what you just said in the green room?
I said it's finally nice to talk to you. I've been following you around for a long time, many years. I've been hearing about your work, and I appreciate that there's other people out there that still ask questions as to, you know, like how buildings fall down when nothing hits them.
Fantastic. And you don't listen to me because you're a paid agent?
No, I don't listen to you because I listen to No Agenda, and they pretty much take up all of my time. It's 7 hours a week from them.
Oh, amazing, amazing. I do some posting on noagendasocial.com, their Mastodon server, and I actually really enjoy the show. They're just one step away from being fakeologists. They will not take that final leap, I'm guessing, because they don't want to lose their...
I think it's like autism. There's definitely a spectrum out there of people whose, you know, their interest and their skepticism has a certain limit or level or gain, and it's okay that No Agenda is not like the fakeologist, and it doesn't need to be, because it is how it is one hop. And just because you learned geography doesn't mean you will refuse to learn science or physics. So I think you guys both have a place in this world. My reasons for not listening to you guys is because it's usually a lot of agreement, especially in a lot of, it creates a lot of angst for me, to see that, you know, I'm not the only one seeing this, and yet we haven't been able to do anything about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a regular producer like they are. They're very consistent. Consistency is the name of the game, and I don't produce really at all the last 2 years. I rely on just the odd audio chatter.
And you don't need to, man. Like, being overproduced in there all the time means there's a constant signal. And the way this stuff works, and especially with fakeology from what I understand, is the stuff is happening perpetually, but the news about it isn't perpetual.
Yeah. Well, I don't have anything new either.
Yeah, I think that's all right, though. I don't think it's like the quest for eyeballs, right? It is always a problem of reporting the news and yet trying to get people to come back and see tomorrow's news with no guarantee any of it's going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I would like to do a weekly show, because there's enough to talk about in a week. And if I take calls every week, I would probably not have much time to say my own stuff. So I know there's a two-hour show every week for fakeologists, and I'm going to hopefully change my schedule one of these days and carve out a time and do it, because even if I just talk for an hour on about my blog, which I've done in the past, that would probably be enough. But I've got phone lines set up. Everything's ready to go. I just haven't had a chance to really break away from my severe work schedule, which I do label severe. And anyway, I'm only a few years from retirement, I think, anyway, so then I'll have nothing to do.
Well, that sounds like a blessing to be close to retirement. I'm nowhere near.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I can, really, but if I live very leanly and quietly and didn't go too far from the house, I think I could do it. It's not like I could travel the world or anything exotic like that. Not that I want to, anyway.
And if I recall correctly, are you based out of Canada?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto, Ontario, which is on the north shore of Lake Ontario, right across.
Yeah, I live in Parkdale.
Oh, you live in
Parkdale, Ontario, Toronto, like, yeah, Queen and Ronsey.
Okay, right, where the king and the queen and Ronsey.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, once I delivered to that horrible no-frills, Queen and Jameson.
Oh, King and Jameson. V's, no frills?
Yeah, yeah. It's just really hard to deliver in a big truck. That's why I remember it. It's tiny streets, and you end up running over vagrants and prostitutes and anyone else who gets under your tires. So, yeah, it's just a super convenient
area. Yeah, you know, one
area.
Good thing about the gentrification of Parkdale and the influx of fentanyl is that it's really cleaned up the neighborhood.
I never go down there. I was just saying to Gaia on the other channel, I don't go downtown anymore. I'm a suburbanite, and it's not that I don't like downtown. It's just super congested now.
No, it's out of control.
Yeah, it's uncontrolled growth. We can thank the retired Jack Layton for super intensifying with the Agenda 21 idea, where you just super intensify square kilometers with 25 condos that are 40 stories tall. So doing the math, in particular, your neighbors between Spadina and Front, sorry, between Spadina and Bathurst, Front and the Gardner, he said we'll be putting 50,000 people in this. Is it 2 or 3 square kilometers?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. My cousin is building a couple of the towers in Liberty Village right now, and there's 3 set to go up, and there's not enough water and sewage and electricity for these places even yet. And it's, you know, they're building people $300,000 boxes in the sky that are 550 square feet and 40 floors of it's a half hour trip in elevator rides every day waiting for the lift for some of these folks.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry to interrupt. Can you up your volume? Because on the radio, you're barely audible.
If I only could, let me just check here. This is the main problem I'm having with Discord right now. My audio is so low, I don't know what to do. Let me just see what the settings. It always lowers it back down.
Okay, I pumped my limit a bit. How's that?
Well, you're perfect, remote. It's not the it's the mobile.
You're perfect, really.
Yeah, remote is perfect, and mine is on mobile. I use different Bluetooth. They all have the same problem. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't think of anything else to do. If anyone else had increased the volume of Discord Bluetooth audio, let me know. There's nothing I can do though. And it's either my phone that blew away a setting or the Discord updated itself to do something. I don't know what to do. But anyway, as long as remote, can you hear me okay, or am I?
Yeah, absolutely. You're coming in loud and clear.
All right, then it's Guy. Yeah, I know Guy is very good. He's very good with trying to get the audio up for me, but not much I can do here. So you're from Toronto. About what age bracket are you?
I'm 38.
38, that's a very tight bracket. Well, that's fantastic. So you are a psychologist and a No Agenda fan. That's pretty much what I am. That's really fantastic. I do donate to the No Agenda show, even though when they read my letter, they just sort of mock my position, but that's okay. I believe in the value for value.
They kind of mock everyone. Yeah, it's a little annoying at times, but it's kind of hard to find people that are willing to round up, you know, 7 hours of entertainment. It's pretty funny, you know, sometimes. I like the fact that it's a little bit lighthearted, you know, even if they're talking about, because it's all American stuff, it has very little bearing on my, you know, it's just good to kind of keep my toes in.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of tech talk, and I take a lot of their tech ideas. For instance, I started Psychologist.social, which is my own Mastodon server, if you'd like to join.
I definitely will. There.
Yeah, and our server has not been banned on NoAgendaSocial.com yet. I'm just waiting for the day. You know, there's that ability where you could ban a whole server in the Mastodon Federation. But I really appreciate all the tech talk, and I would never have heard about a lot of things if I didn't listen to Adam. So he's pretty smart about that, which I really appreciate. And I read John C. Dvorak in PC Magazine for a long time. I would just go to the bookstore and read his page and then leave. I wouldn't buy the magazine. And then it went online, of course, years later, back when the internet started.
Yeah, those, especially John. John's been in my life a long time. I was you know, I was getting my, like, CompTIA A+ when I was, like, 20 years old and stuff. I had my first Commodore when I was 8 and my first, like, 486 when I was 12. So I've always been deep into having the technology at my fingertips, and people who care more about the bits and the bytes, I like to say, rather than the lifestyle of technology, they're always a lot more interesting to talk to and listen to.
Yeah, are you born and bred in Toronto?
Yeah, obviously, first generation immigrant, like many of us in the GTA, but come from an Italian background. But yes, born and raised here in Etobicoke, actually.
Oh my God, whereabouts in Etobicoke?
Islington and Eglinton.
Well, that's a rich area.
Yeah, well, when my folks moved in there, though, 30-some-odd years ago, it wasn't. It was kind of the base of where all the immigrants were settling.
Yeah, well, one of my good friends is Italian. I think he was born here. His parents came over maybe in the 50s. Oh, hold on.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Did that come through clearly or was it cutting out?
No, it all chopped up for me as well.
Okay, so StreamerBot is sick too. I gotta fix him. He got ill.
StreamerBot.
Somehow.
Oh, poor StreamerBot.
So I think I was fiddling with his settings as well, and something happened. That sounds great. Everything just falls apart when you're not paying attention sometimes, or just does it on air. So yeah, he's second generation. Well, he was born here, so his parents settled probably at Kiel and Eglinton, which isn't too far away from Islington. So.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I know a lot of people grew up in that hood.
Yeah, so that's where a lot of Italians were, and most of the Italians have moved to Woodbridge by now.
Oh, yeah, Woodbridge, Bolton, all over.
Yeah, okay, well, that's amazing. So can you speak Italian?
Sì, parla proprio dialetto, però I'm definitely trying to learn proper Italian. I speak a lot of dialect.
Oh, that's amazing. That's cool. Well, Italy is on my family's list of places. And are you familiar with the Humble and Fred show? Humble and Dread or Dumble and Dread?
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny because Fred just mentioned that if you're going to Europe for the first time, and I've never been to Europe, he said go to Italy first because it's got the most diverse terrain. You can go from one end to the other and go through all kinds of different countryside, and it just looks different. I guess Italy is sort of a cobbled-together country as well.
Yeah, it's been invaded by everyone and different kinds of people, right? You had fair people invading from the north, and you had dark people invading from the south.
Yeah, and it's not a homogenous country at all. As a matter of fact, from what I understand, northern...
No, north to south even, cuisine changes from butter and corn to olive oil and wheat.
Northern Italians, they don't even consider southern Italians on the same level at all.
There's a ton of that as well, and that goes right back to the whole, like, hey, I have lighter skin than you. I must be a higher caste.
Yeah, I guess that's a worldwide thing. Yeah, I can see that. The lighter, the better, no matter where you are. But, of course, you fry in the sun.
Yeah, unless you want toast.
Yeah. Well, and...
My friend, I got to let you go. I got to run. I'm sorry, but we'll catch up again.
Oh, yeah, let's catch up, because we were just complaining that there are no Canadians to talk to. So definitely come here anytime, and join fakeologist.com. Send me your email address, and I'll send you a login. And join fakeologist.social. Yeah, let's keep it up, because I was just complaining there's no Canadians to talk to, not even an hour ago, and you showed up. I guess
you put it into the universe, and I heard it. See, that's how close I am. You take care, buddy.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Good to see you.
Gracias.
Gracias, Guy. Nice speaking with you. A presto.
And I think that's Karl Marx as his icon.
Let's go to the room, man.
Is that Karl Marx as his icon?
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is Rick from Paul McClory. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is Cody from Memphis. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Fakeologists.
Recorded live.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
What more do you want tacked onto this? 9/11 was an inside job?
Was it?
Who cares? Global acts of terrorism happen every day.
Now recording.
Hi everyone, you are listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com. It is Saturday, the 28th of September 2019, and tonight we are going to start with something that is, more relevant to the French-speaking people. But anyway, I figured that it was interesting to speak about the guy, and the guy in question is Jacques Chirac, the former French president. He was pretty famous in the Middle East for some reason that we will evocate later on. But I am about to play something that is famous for having said, and I will try to translate the idea of it after. So let's listen to Jacques Chirac.
Le travailleur français qui habite à la Goutte d'Or où je me promenais avec Alain Juppé la semaine dernière, il y a 3 ou 4 jours, et qui voit, sur le palier à côté de son HLM, entassé une famille avec un père de famille, 3 ou 4 épouses et une vingtaine de gosses, et qui gagne 50 000 francs de prestations sociales sans naturellement travailler. Si vous ajoutez à cela, si vous ajoutez à cela le bruit et l'odeur...
Enfin, M. Chirac, que vous avez choisi un cas extrême, un petit peu excessif, vous le disiez vous-même tout à l'heure, pour essayer d'attirer l'attention sur le problème des immigrations, oui. C'est bien cela.
Je ne fais pas mien, bien entendu, le témoignage que j'ai rapporté, mais je l'ai à des centaines d'exemplaires chaque fois que je vais dans ces quartiers difficiles.
So, that was a quick audio clip of Jacques Chirac, one of the most polemic things he said, most controversial thing he ever said in his political career. That was during a kind of low-key meeting, not something of a big meeting and a kind of a place where you eat and drink. And he was quite the drinker, so maybe he was not 100% when he said that. But what he said, basically, what we can hear on that audio clip was... Let's get the testimony of the example of a guy that was a French guy working with his wife that was making 1,500 French francs, 10,500 Swiss French francs per month. And he said that this guy was living on the same floor as an immigrant guy with his 3 wives, 20 kids that was making 50k in a social prestation each and every month. And he said after that, if you add the noise and the smell, you can understand that the French guy on his doorstep is pretty pissed. So that was what Jacques Chirac said. And that is why he was controversial at one point. But this guy managed to get to the place of president, so it's not nothing. And I always liked the way this guy was speaking French, the way he was acting. He was really, really the people guy, friendly and everything. And what is interesting in the end is that this guy, he managed to get elected with 82% of the vote. Because he was running against someone that is hated all over France, Jean-Marie Le Pen. So he got the pleasure to be the most well-elected French president ever. Jacques Chirac he was. And I will play another audio clip, one that is fascinating, because that's mostly the reason why Jacques Chirac was so loved in the Arab world. That and also the fact that he chose to not go in Iraq when the American did it. Is that a small incident that happened in Jerusalem? But let's play the audio clip for better understanding.
L'explosion, elle arrive en fait après une heure ou une heure et quart de visite, extrêmement mouvementée, hachée. Jacques Chirac essaye d'avancer. Parfois, la police lui dit, Monsieur le Président, n'avancez pas parce qu'il y a peut-être des terroristes ici, il y a peut-être des terroristes ici. Jacques Chirac dit, continue à avancer, veut absolument serrer des mains. On sait que Jacques Chirac était un grand spécialiste de la poignée de main et visiblement, il voulait serrer la main à tous les Palestiniens qu'il allait rencontrer à Jérusalem-Est. Mais c'est pénible, ça dure longtemps, à chaque fois un policier s'interpose, parfois il faut jouer des coudes et parfois même le président lui-même repousse des policiers israéliens. C'est quand même une situation très baroque pour une visite d'État d'un président de la République. Et puis soudain, il explose parce que c'est le xième incident, parce que pour la xième fois, un soldat lui interdit de progresser. Et donc il appelle le chef de la police, je m'en souviens bien, il avait des lunettes noires, il faisait un peu ces gardes du corps qu'on voit dans les films, etc. Et il le pointe du doigt et il lui lance la fameuse expression en anglais, « Do you want me to go back to my plane ?»« Do you want me to go back to my plane ?»
Il y a encore comme problème. What do you want me to go back to my plane and go back to France? Is that what you want? Then let them go. Let them do. No, that's no problem. So this is not a method. This is a provocation.
C'est à ce moment-là que nous, à l'époque, j'étais en agence de presse où on se dit, on assiste à ce qu'on appelle un incident diplomatique. Donc on envoie ce qu'on appelle une alerte ou un flash. Et un quart d'heure après, toutes les télévisions qui étaient en poste à Jérusalem, les américaines, les anglaises, arrivent dans la vieille ville pour filmer la suite de cette visite qui sera encore mouvementée pendant une bonne heure jusqu'au mur des Lamentations, en passant par la mosquée Al-Aqsa, où d'ailleurs Jacques Chirac n'a pas eu le droit d'entrer. Il y avait encore un mur de soldats israéliens, et ça s'est terminé donc au mur des Lamentations. Mais tout ça a duré 2 heures, c'était mouvementé, et surtout on se demandait, mais qu'est-ce qui va arriver? Est-ce qu'il va y avoir un incident? Est-ce qu'il va y avoir un coup de feu éventuellement tiré dans la vieille ville? Et dans ce cas-là, qu'est-ce qui se passe, quoi?
So, that was the testimony of the journalist that was there, and we have the chance to hear this famous phrase of Jacques Chirac to the Israeli responsible of security. What do you want? Me to go home? To go back to my plane? So, that is the reason, one of them at least, why Jacques Chirac was so loved in the Arab world. But personally, I have an affection for the guy because he was a people person. He was really a people person. There is a documentary that you can watch where the guy was on a village in France, very, very far and remote place, and he was speaking to each and everyone, and he was saying the same thing. C'est beau, mais c'est loin. Meaning, it's beautiful, but it's far. And you can see the footage of this guy speaking to 50 people saying the exact same thing. C'est beau, mais c'est loin. Bonjour. C'est beau, mais c'est loin. And just like 20 seconds later, c'est beau, mais c'est loin. And the guy could do that for hours without any problem. I mean, there is an agricultural show every year in Paris, and this guy, when he was the president, and even before and after that, he must have the most best fun of his life doing that. You can see him on the internet eating all kind of cheese, meat product, whatever, drinking all sorts of liquor. I mean, the guy was someone that liked to live, and yes, a guy that loved life, and pretty famous for many things. And one thing that I remember in a documentary was that there was a testimony of this driver slash garde du corps, bodyguard at the time, that gave him a funny nickname. When he get to see one of his mistresses, the nickname the driver was giving him was 3 minutes, shower included. So, that speaks for itself. So, let's hear a bit of Jacques Chirac speaking French. I know that not much people listening to this are speaking French, but I really like listening to the guy, and in the end, that is my show, so I do what I want, and I want to listen to Jacques Chirac for, let's say, 4 or 5 minutes. Come on.
L'évolution démographique, l'évolution technologique et l'évolution économique, et notamment l'ouverture des frontières, ont conduit le gouvernement à penser que le nombre de demandeurs d'emploi était susceptible de s'accroître.
Tu ne fais pas de ville, toi?
Non, ah non. Je suis comme toi.
Ouais.
Toi, tu n'as pas l'air de la faire guère mieux.
T'as un bon placeau?
Oui.
Monsieur Chirac, est-ce que vous aviez un ours quand vous étiez petit?
J'avais un lapin. Bon, ben, ça vous lâche.
Vous n'aviez pas d'ours?
Je n'avais pas d'ours. J'avais un lapin, mais auquel je tenais beaucoup.
Je n'ai aucune intention, je dis bien aucune intention, ceci doit être bien clair, d'assumer les fonctions de Premier ministre de M. Mitterrand. Ce soir, je ne suis pas le Premier ministre et vous n'êtes pas le Président de la République. Nous sommes deux candidats à égalité. Vous me permettrez donc de vous appeler M. Mitterrand.
Et vous avez tout à fait raison, M. le Premier ministre.
Le travailleur français qui habite à la Goutte d'Or où je me promenais avec Alain Juppé la semaine dernière, il y a 3 ou 4 jours, et qui voit sur le palier à côté de son HLM entasser une famille avec un père de famille, 3 ou 4 épouses et une vingtaine de gosses, et qui gagne 50 000 francs de prestations sociales sans naturellement travailler. Si vous ajoutez à cela, le bruit et l'odeur, eh bien, le travailleur français sur le palier devient fou.
Sur votre livre, là, il y a un pommier. C'est pas évident, c'est votre contribution à l'écologie ou c'est une œuvre, une imagination, une intuition artistique? Qu'est-ce que c'est?
C'est d'abord parce que j'aime beaucoup les pommes, je suis un mangeur de pommes. Et ensuite, je trouve que c'était joli. Voilà. C'est
comme
tout, ça ne va pas plus loin.
C'est un geste spontané.
J'aime bien le cidre aussi.
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a encore comme problème? Je commence à en avoir assez. What do you want? Me to go back to my plane and go back to France? Is that what you want? Then let them go. Let them do. No, that's no danger, no problem. No, this is not a method. This is a provocation.
Mes chers compatriotes, après consultation du Premier ministre, du président du Sénat, du président de l'Assemblée nationale, j'ai décidé de dissoudre l'Assemblée nationale. Aujourd'hui, on rapporte une histoire abracadabrantesque. On fait parler un homme mort il y a plus d'un an. On disserte sur des faits invraisemblables qui ont eu lieu il y a plus de 14 ans. Et voilà pourquoi je demande que ces éléments soient transmis à la justice, afin que la vérité balaye la calomnie.
Je dis c'est loin, mais c'est beau. Comment ça va? Je disais c'est loin, mais c'est beau. C'est loin. Je dis c'est loin, mais c'est beau.
L'Irak ne représente pas aujourd'hui une menace immédiate telle qu'elle justifie une guerre immédiate. S'affranchir de la légitimité des Nations Unies, privilégier la force sur le droit, ce serait prendre une lourde responsabilité.
That also is better on video. This guy was totally.
Mesdames et messieurs les élus, mes chers collègues.
Get into it with a lady while
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
So that was Jacques Chirac, the former French president, who died yesterday. Oh no, it's 2 days ago. Anyway, great guy, fascinating character, pretty funny. And I think that everyone listening that like foreign language will have enjoyed to hear this guy speak for a bit. Fascinating character. I cannot think of no one better to represent France to the foreign world. Like I said, a lover of life, great eater, and excellent guy altogether. Wonderful politician, if you want my advice. But the thing is that he was a piece of shit, of course, because he was a politician. But he was a funny piece of shit, and that is not given to each and every human walking this earth. So, as far as I know, he is okay in my book, because he was funny. Like George W. Bush, in the end, what will he do? What is on the program? So, there is nothing to be expected good of those people, so if they can be fun and well-spoken and interesting to hear speak, it's at least a good point. I will now play a song that is called Le Bruit et l'Odeur. The Smell and the Noise, or The Noise and the Smell, in that order. It is a song by a group named Zebda, which is, let's say that it is a left-leaning group composed of individual that came in France via the immigration, or their parents at least. Anyway, let's listen to that song, sorry.
Je suis tombé par terre, c'est pas la faute à Voltaire. Le nez dans le ruisseau, y'avait pas de l'eau. S'il n'y a pas plus d'anges dans le ciel et sur la terre, pourquoi faut-il qu'on crève dans le ghetto? Plutôt que d'être issu d'un peuple qui a trop souffert, j'aime mieux élaborer une thèse. À ces messieurs qui légifèrent, le soin de me balancer des ancêtres. On a beau être né rive gauche de la Garonne, converser avec l'accent des cigales. Ils sont pas des kilos dans la cité gasconne, à faire qu'elle ne soit pas qu'une escale. On peut mourir au front et faire toutes les guerres, et beau défendre un si joli drapeau. Il en faut toujours plus, pourtant y'a un hommage à faire, à se tomber à Monte Cassino. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau du cœur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau du cœur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau du cœur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau du cœur. La pauvre est assassine, alors c'est vrai, je pénalise ceux qui flinguent le monde, n'ont pas la pelouse en bas. Je suis un rêveur et pourtant ami, j'analyse. Je suis un érudit et je vous dis.
Je suis un beau croate et musulman, voilà le hic. Un plateau polonais, républicain et laïque. Certains regrettent de pas être noir de peau. J'ai mis une réponse, les gars, vous avez du faux.
Qui nous soulève, elle nous décime, j'en ai peur pour la nuit des temps.
Elle aime nos rois, mais pour qui gagne les tournois. Elle aime Bolly, mais a jamais rien aboli. Elle aime nos rois, mais pour qui gagne les tournois. Elle aime Bolly, mais a jamais rien aboli.
Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau du cœur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau du cœur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau du cœur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau du cœur. Qui a construit cette route, qui a bâti cette ville et qui n'habite pas? À
ceux qui se plaignent du bruit, à ceux qui condamnent l'odeur.
Je me présente, voici. Je m'appelle la prima Madrouane et faites place Guido Origino Ali, je ne suis pas de glace. Une voix m'a dit marathon, cherche la lumière du gouffre. J'ai épuisé un combat, la bonne affaire, j'en ai marre de la peur que j'ai lu dans les yeux de ceux qui ont trois fois rien qui le croyaient précieux. Quand j'ai compris la loi, j'ai compris ma défaite. Intégrez-vous, disait-elle, c'est une chose faite alors.
Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau piqueur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau piqueur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau piqueur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau piqueur.
Le bruit du marteau piqueur, dans tes oreilles tu finis ta vie, et bourdonne les abeilles. Le bruit du marteau piqueur, dans tes oreilles tu finis ta vie, bourdonne les abeilles.
Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau piqueur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau piqueur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau piqueur. Le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit et l'odeur, le bruit du marteau piqueur.
So that was Zebda with Le Bruit et l'Odeur, and I choose that song because of the title, of course. And the thing is that the first ever time I ever heard the discourse of Jacques Chirac that we heard on the audio clip was by that mean. Because at one point the discourse was played on the radio before the song, so, or after the song. De la effect, maybe. Ha! So, let's see. Anyway. The thing is that it's the first way I came across that specific discourse, which is pretty disgusting, but you cannot expect more. But the thing is that it was prettily worded, so at least the devil have a good speaking word. And we are now going to change topic, going to the main topic of tonight, because it is indeed the Frag 21, named New Kids on the Block. And the first part was a chat with Ab and a new person named Remote44, so listen to that. I really don't have the information at the moment at the exact length of that chat, but if you are still there, thank you. Thank you indeed. So yes, Frag 21, New Kids on the Block. Because this character, this Greta Thunberg, is making the round and it seems to be all the rage in the, at least in the conspiracy world, and probably in mainstream media also. I am not that well versed in mainstream media, but let's hear from herself what she has to say about her personality and everything. And then after that we will speak a bit with Rick, Exoteric64. Rick, are you on? Can you speak at the moment?
Yes, sorry, Gerasio, I'm here.
Yes, excellent. So let's listen to Greta Thunberg herself.
I'll just go and get my bucket so I can be sticking. One sec. Okay, go, play.
Yes.
I'm evil. I do not want to be back in school. Yet, you all come to us young people for so much. How dare you?
Obviously she got a breakdown, but she said it herself, I am evil. And maybe this poor kid is not evil, but
she is a pathetic, a woeful actor. And the more you look at her and listen to her and watch her reading off script.
Yes,
so
what she thinks of script is
yeah, so she's totally scripted. And she's not a good actor, actress, actor, whatever. She's appalling, you know, and it really, just to sit there and watch her is to be able to not want to shoot your TV like Elvis Presley or throw it out the window or whatever is incredible. I saw a number of good things. I think that post you sent a picture of her being interviewed in a scripted stuffed up, and she didn't. She was off script, and she couldn't say anything. She couldn't think in a speech. She was very similar to Obama, another great actor on script, but a terrible one off script.
Yes,
absolutely incapable of thinking on his feet. The complete opposite, say Bill Clinton or nearly any other. Jacques Chirac, yeah, for sure. Meaning that they've got no personality and that they're a creation and they're afraid to show the real person in there. But so Greta Thunberg is 16, I believe. For some reason, they were saying she was 9, but she's 16, so she's not a kid, you know. She's had a lot of training. Her mother's a famous opera singer.
Yes.
Her father's an actor as well, so she's got the breeding, which, you know, we all know of. Her mother, and blatantly in photos I've seen, has blatantly, when she was a child, made sure that both kids were covering their left eyes in a photograph. And the mother's sitting there watching to make sure the little girls don't take their hands away from their eyes. So it was a code, you know, for those out there that the left-hand path is in action, which is a satanic symbol or certainly a great sign. There's plenty of photos of her with her eye blacked out, her covering her left eye out there. There's a number of covers. Yes. I think Wired magazine has one. There's another famous one with just a black hand covering her left, the shadow of someone's hand covering her face. Or she's doing a Sieg Heil or something or other, I can't tell, but either way, the shadow is covering her left eye. So it's all it's really out there for those aware to know that this is, you know, the rollout of a PSYOP. And that photo that you posted today of the pigtails. So the pigtail revolution is what we should be calling this, because Chairman Mao had his little pigtail offsider. Himmler had a little, and Hitler both were pictured with little pigtail blonde role models reading scripts, obviously, for the masses. And Stalin had a blonde pigtailed little muse as well. So it's obviously a made thing. It's a thing that the revolution, you know, becoming the revolution which is on our doorsteps right now, and will be waved in by these zombies out there, which are everywhere. I've never felt more alienated than not with good friends, but just with people, acquaintances that I know are just completely for this climate change revolution. That, you know, that are oblivious to all the real problems out there. I just love this virtue signaling ability to go and say we're saving the planet.
Being on the right side of things, but to do a bit of history, I did some research because, of course, I did some research. And the first idea, the first thing that came to my mind of children being used in some ways to steer the political issue and to make a societal change is the Children Crusade, which took place in 1212 in northern France. So. It was
I know about that one. That's interesting. That there you go. Yeah.
Don't you?
So could you want to elaborate? Can you elaborate a bit more for the people that haven't heard about it?
Yes, exactly. It was concise. It was kind of an agglomeration of children, of poor children from different places, led by two different persons, depending on which geographical area they came from, and there is some dispute in the reality of that story, but I think that is the first one I could remember of child being used to change something in society or in the world.
Explain what they did though.
They did go, the story is that band of children went into Italy, and most of them were sold into slavery. Because most of them were tricked by merchants that were telling them, okay, take this boat or this boat and you will go into the
Holy Land
of Jerusalem.
That's what I'd heard, that they were tricked into going off in this revolution, and they were all kidnapped by slave traders virtually, or lured into a thing. So I've no doubt, maybe it happened sooner, less than, you know, 12... I thought it was a bit closer than the last few hundred years, but that probably sounds about right. If you remove the extra 1,000 years, the 1,000 years they've added to their timeline, allegedly, either way, it's very feasible to see how gullible and stupid they are. I mean, literally, these kids now out there would, if you gave them free shipping, you know, and said we're going to go and have a, we're all going to go to the United Nations and protest and save the planet because we're going to die within 5 years. They'll get on planes. They'd run away from their parents to do it. You know what I mean? That's how well controlled and controlled they are at the moment.
Close from us, and I think that probably people from New Zealand and Australia did it also. You get the case of those young people that tried to join ISIS or whatever the name you want to give to that organization.
No? Yes. Yeah.
Many of those people that took. So anyway, that is the first thing that came to my mind when I started to think of child being used in nefarious means, you know, to try to steer political change. And the end of the story is interesting because all those children supposedly were sold into slavery. So maybe the young of today should take a page of that book and read a bit of their history and look at that a little bit. Horrible robot, so I had to mute him for the time being because I don't know it sounded for each and everyone else, but for me it was horrible.
No, get rid of that. Whatever that was, terrible. he sounds like a gremlin.
Yes.
It's a gremlin. A Dutch gremlin.
Let's not be too much off track because there's a lot to be spoke about. And this Greta Thunberg is just the new iteration. Is that a word in English? Iteration?
We'll say today it can be a word. I think it is. Iteration.
Iteration.
Yeah.
The 2019 model of something that existed for many years. Many, many years. So, there is a lot of examples that are known to history of such people, you know. And one example that came to mind is Naira Al Saud. Naira Al Saud was the daughter of the Kuwaitian ambassador. And she spoke in front of a committee of Congress, if I am correct. And she did say some horrible things and described horrible scenes that supposedly she witnessed, but it was all fake. And let's listen to her for better understanding once again.
Thank you very much. Our final witness is also using an assumed name, and again we ask our friends in the media to respect the need for her to protect her family. And we finally call on Naira to testify.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Naira, and I just came out of Kuwait. My mother and I were in Kuwait on August 2nd for a peaceful summer holiday. My older sister had a baby on July 29th, and we wanted to spend some time in Kuwait with her. I only pray that none of my 10th grade classmates had a summer vacation like I did. I may have wished sometimes that I could be an adult, that I could grow up quickly. What I saw happen to the children of Kuwait and to my country has changed my life forever. It has changed the life of all Kuwaitis, young and old. We are children no more. My sister, with my 5-day-old nephew, traveled across the desert to safety. There is no milk available for the baby in Kuwait. They barely escaped when their car was stuck in the desert sand, and help came from Saudi Arabia. I stayed behind and wanted to do something for my country. The second week after invasion.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hey folks, Alex Jones here. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio at Fakeologist.com.
John Adams.
I volunteered at the Al Adan Hospital with 12 other women who wanted to help as well. I was the youngest volunteer. The other women were from 20 to 30 years old. While I was there, I saw the Iraqi soldiers come into the hospital with guns. They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor. That was horrifying. I could not help but think of my nephew, who, if born premature, might have died that day as well. After I left the hospital, some of my friends and I distributed flyers condemning the Iraqi invasion until we were warned we might be killed if the Iraqis saw us. The Iraqis have destroyed everything in Kuwait. They stripped the supermarkets of food, the pharmacies of medicine, the factories of medical supplies, ransacked our houses, and tortured neighbors and friends. I saw and talked to a friend of mine after his torture and released by the Iraqis. He is 22, but he looked as though he could have been an old man. The Iraqis dunked his head into a swimming pool until he almost drowned. They pulled out his fingernails and applied electric shock to sensitive private parts of his body. He was lucky to survive. If an Iraqi soldier is found dead in a neighborhood, they burn to the ground all the houses in the general vicinity and would not let firefighters come until only ash and rubble was left. The Iraqis were making fun of President Bush and verbally and physically abusing my family and me on our way out of Kuwait. We only did so because life in Kuwait became unbearable. They have forced us to hide, burn, and destroy everything identifying our country and our government. I want to emphasize that Kuwait is our mother and the Emir our father. We repeated this on the roofs of our houses in Kuwait until the Iraqis began shooting at us. And we shall repeat it again. I am glad I am 15, old enough to remember Kuwait before Saddam Hussein destroyed it, and young enough to rebuild it. Thank you.
You fucking long bitch.
Mira, thank you. Let me thank all of our witnesses. We've passed 8 years in the existence of the Congressional Human Rights Caucus. We've had scores of hearings about human rights abuses throughout the world. And I know my co-chairman, Tom Lantos, will join me in telling you that we have never heard in all this time, in all circumstances, a record of inhumanity and brutality and sadism as the ones that the witnesses have given us today.
And well paid.
And this is the same story the Germans got accused of.
People of the civilized countries of this world.
Can't take it anymore. That's enough. You get the point.
Yeah, no, it is. And so the same story, incubators and babies, was used by the allies against the Germans in the Second World War. Was it the First World War?
It we'll have to the Second World War. Incubators, but it's
it wasn't incubators. They came through the hospital, yes. And they were throwing, babies up and bayoneting them, German soldiers. Yes. I've got an old, I like reading old, you know, if I can find old books and papers and things like that. It's an Australian country journal that was sent out to all the regional areas back in the, from 1850 to 14 issue, a advert on one of the pages, and it was the Lusitania going down, and it said, "Countrymen, how can you sit by and let the Germans do this?" You know, and it's got pictures of, it had a cartoon of the ship going down and pictures of German women and children jumping up and down dancing. And it said that the people in Germany are dancing away with all these people, women and children have died. You know, it was blatant PR bullshit that the average farmer and his sons would have read and gone, "Well, we're not standing by for that," because it was saying, "Come into town and join your local infantry division, and you're going to go, we're going over, you know, I've sent straight to Egypt and then off to Gallipoli, you know."
Yes.
And because it was a psyop. And people back in those days, that generation, they read something and they believed it. Like that's, you know.
It was also the case at that time. It took a bit of time after that before that girl was caught. So she was, to repeat the point, Naira al-Saud. She was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the U.S.
That's right.
And fascinating testimony.
Fantastic. But that's the thing. She was a good actress, though. The difference being she was obviously a well-trained actress. Because she was genuinely crying, whereas Greta Thunberg is fucking terrible and can't act and looks like she looks like she's, you know, when you see someone doing Shakespeare and they're not very good and they're trying to emphasize everything and they, you know, a horse, my kingdom, or a horse. She's all over the place and up and down, but it works. And there's people, majority, believe what she's saying. It's unbelievable to see how stupid people are.
Yes. The thing is that, like I said, me and Gaia put together, and mostly Gaia, let's be honest, a wonderful Fakeopedia page that is linked all over the Discord server.
This man, Gaia, and his Fakeopedia is very, very good. I mean, I've been through a number of them, and it's just impeccably researched and fantastic. Credit to Gaia. Special credit to Gaia. Carbon credit to Gaia. Send him 50.
But in the bad sense, by saying that he's a good guy, we made him lose 50 points already.
Exactly. So he's on level.
Yes.
But the use of children, though, I would say, has been used since time immemorial because people trust an adult has a natural empathy towards a child. And you tell them that something's, you know, being gone wrong. You know, it's like Save the Children. There's all these people that send thousands of dollars or hundreds of their dollars that they cannot afford to a picture of a little black, Ethiopian staring at them on their thing. And these charities, and I have experience with this, getting ripped off by one when I was working for one, they're run by people with no emotion whatsoever. They're usually English that are running these big charities, and they're master con deceivers. You know, they train these people to stand outside banks and run up to you, and they get a dollar. You know, you donate $5 a month out of your or $5 a week. $4.90 of that goes to them. I've worked for them. They're sitting there drinking champagne. They train backpackers up over here to come over here, and they send them out. They get paid $15 an hour here to charity for fundraising.
Yes.
Plus, they get a commission. Say for that, the $5, they get a dollar a month. The company gets $3.90 or something or other for nothing. And so 10 cents of your $5 goes to that charity, which is just unbelievable. But people are sucked in by these images of children. They want these little Africans to be helped. It's a virtue signaling.
Good sentiment in the end. To get back a bit back on history, there is also one that is fascinating, is Severn Suzuki. Severn Suzuki is kind of the prototype of Greta Thunberg. And, of course, we are going to listen to her because We have the chance to be using the fantastic bot that Trift put together. So thank Trift for this bot, because we listen now to Severn Suzuki, and then after that we will of course say who she is and what is the context. Let's just say that it was recorded in Rio in 1992.
Hello, I'm Severn Suzuki, speaking for ECHO, the Environmental Children's Organization. We're a group of 12 and 13-year-olds trying to make a difference. Vanessa Setti, Morgan Geisler, Michelle Quigg, and me. We've raised all the money to come here ourselves, to come 5,000 miles to tell you adults you must change your ways. Coming up here today, I have no hidden agenda. I am fighting for my future. Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. I am here to speak for all generations to come. I am here to speak on behalf of the starving children around the world whose cries go unheard. I am here to speak for the countless animals dying across this planet because they have nowhere left to go. I am afraid
to go out in the sun now because of the holes in our ozone. I'm afraid to breathe the air because I don't know what chemicals are in it. I used to go fishing in Vancouver, my home, with my dad, until just a few years ago we found the fish full of cancers.
Oh, fuck off. Come on.
And now we hear of animals and plants going extinct every day, vanishing forever.
Every day.
In my life, I have dreamt of seeing the great herds of wild animals, jungles and rainforests, full of birds and butterflies. But now I wonder if they will even exist for my children to see. Did you have to worry of these things when you were my age? All this is happening before our eyes, and yet we act as if we have all the time we want and all the solutions. I'm only a child, and I don't have all the solutions. But I want you to realize, neither do you. You don't know how to fix the holes in our ozone layer. You don't know how to bring the salmon back up a dead stream. You don't know how to bring back an animal now extinct. And you can't bring back the forest that once grew where there is now a desert. If you don't know how to fix it, please stop breaking it. Here, you may be delegates of your government, business people, organizers, reporters, or politicians. But really, your mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, aunts and uncles, and all of you are someone's child. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all part of a family, 5 billion strong. In fact, 30 million species strong. And borders and governments will never change that. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all in this together and should act as one single world towards one single goal. In my anger, I am not blind, and in my fear, I am not afraid of telling the world how I feel. In my country, we make so much waste. We buy and throw away, and yet northern countries will not share what they need. Even when we have more than enough, we are afraid to share. We are afraid to let go of some of our wealth. In Canada, we live the privileged life, with plenty of food, water, and shelter. We have watches, bicycles, computers, and television sets. The list could go on for 2 days. 2 days ago, here in Brazil, we were shocked when we spent time with some children living on the streets. This is what one child told us. I wish I was rich. And if I were, I would give all the street children food, clothes, medicines, shelter, and love and affection. If a child on the street who has nothing is willing to share, why are we who have everything still so greedy? I can't stop thinking that these are children my own age, that it makes a tremendous difference where you are born. That I could be one of those children living in the favelas of Rio. I could be a child starving in Somalia, or a victim of war in the Middle East, or a beggar in India. I am only a child, yet I know if all the money spent on war was spent on finding environmental answers.
Enough. Like the famous Jim Jones once said, enough.
Yeah, drink some Kool-Aid, little girl.
Yes, exactly. No, take the injection.
Take the injection.
You'll be faster.
Yeah.
So, 7 Suzuki it was.
Like a little, yeah. Yeah. And so that was 1992.
Yes.
Right. Well, I bet you, is a female or a male 7 Suzuki?
It's a female.
Okay. Well, it's I bet she's had children by now. She would have had children, and they're probably happy and healthy. And these climate predictions have just been ridiculous, and they're so easily provably wrong. You know, like Al Gore and his fucking crap movie. I mean, I couldn't even watch that movie. That's how bad it is. Just the fact that his face pops up in it. And he makes Greta Thunberg look credible. Because you look at his eyes, the guy's a psychopath. You know, like you can see he's got, he he can't hide his eyes what he's up to. And the fact that his business partner, they paired him up with a guy called Blood. So it's Blood and Gore, and that is the name of their business.
Yes.
I mean, you couldn't fucking make it up, really. Yes.
Also, on Severn Suzuki, what is interesting is that she raised the money with some member of her organization to go to Rio and whatever, but her father is a university professor in the genetic department at the University of British Columbia from 1963 until 2001. So let me tell you that in 1992, that piece of shit was totally able to sell whatever, whoever he wanted, to wherever he wanted in the world.
Yeah, of course.
Without having to beg for money to anybody. So clearly she was like the precursor to Greta.
For Thunberg.
Yes, Greta Thunberg.
Yeah. But it's just incredible that they can use the same tricks time after time after time and fool people. You know, it's incredible. Who was it that said, the founder of the Bavarian Illuminati, what's his name, Weishaupt. He said, oh, stupid man, how can you be, he said it, and he was quoted saying, oh, stupid man, how are you so stupid to let this happen to, time after time. They know we're dumb on the whole. So 5% are aware, maybe, and are willing to do or say something about it. And maybe there's 15% out there that kind of go, oh, that's fake, but they just don't bother doing anything about it or say anything about it. They just go with it. But we're just literally guided like lemmings en masse most of the time. And just incredibly stupid. I mean, I can't watch these people or listen to them because I can hear them lying in their voice. But other people obviously haven't got that talent, or the majority, but the psychologists, superheroes out there, on a collective majority, I'd say 98% of everyone on the psychologist site have got that bullshit detector thing, and are not fooled, and are willing to say something about it. Because the worst thing is the people that just don't care, and they just sit there and they read they see the thing, they probably know it's not right, but they go along with it anyway. And then there's the other ones that are just absolutely believe, because the thing is, it is a good thing to want to save the planet. Of course it's good to want to stop polluting waters and things like that. It's a genuine cause.
Yes,
it is a good cause.
It's the way, and it's not good.
It's the end goal of that. In the book, where it was first written, the Club of Rome, I think it was 72 or was it 82, where they wrote, we've come up with a common weapon, the enemy, and the enemy will be man and the climate. And we'll use that as to bring in the phase in their global agenda. So you're going to have a technocratic empire with based on a one world currency of carbon.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
At least it should be, but for some reason we didn't have anything playing. So the case of Severn Suzuki was very, very interesting, and it's Ab that brought this to my attention. So welcome, Ab.
Welcome. Hi, Jerry. Comment ça va?
Très très bien, très très bien. Everything is going fine and according to program.
Very good,
hello,
very good.
Hello, psychologist.
Hello, Exoterra Rick.
Hello, psychologist.com.
How are you doing?
I'm good. We're going to roll those furiously, finding old clips of John Laws as we speak. So we're going to do a record. We'll be doing a show tonight, the 43rd episode, before he flies out to Thailand tomorrow.
Oh, you are doing an episode tomorrow. Definitely. That's the Fart Podcast, fartpodcast.com.
Yes, we'll be recording tonight from probably 8 o'clock. So the gang's all there. And then Rollo will be flying off to Thailand. Well, hopefully, there's no reason why he won't be able to do a show from over there, but if not, it'll... So I think we're coming up, this is our 1 year anniversary today, from the, or tomorrow.
Yes, it's my understanding that you were close to that.
That is, yeah. Well, this will be the, technically the 1 year anniversary, so it's just, we're just, Bella Set's able to record tonight, so we'll be doing it. Anyway, back to Greta Thunberg. Yes. Seven Suzuki.
To just say a few things about her. Her father is a fascinating character also. David Suzuki.
Are you kidding? Is that his father? I should have known.
Yes, of course.
He is a rabid genetics
eugenicist
and a genetics expert too by training.
And if you ever just wanted to type davidsuzuki.com, you will be directed to the site of the David Suzuki Foundation.
Oh yeah, he's
the working to find ways for society to live in balance with the natural world that does sustain us.
Yeah, he's
the most famous Canadian scientist we've got.
He's massive here. Absolutely massive.
Oh, is he really? That's interesting.
Oh, incredible. Incredible.
It's fascinating because in my part of the world, the guy is unheard of, you know, because of course the language barrier, but it's really great that I have the chance to have you both on because you know about the guy very, very more than I do.
Oh, yeah. He had a huge television series called The Nature of Things. So he was the preeminent scientist on the television in Canada. Absolutely. For 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, easy. And him and big in New Zealand, big over here, big in around the world. He's also like very close with Attenborough, who's the next biggest thing, if not bigger. And very interesting that
Rick drops, Rick comes back. That's the way his
Dr.
David Bellamy.
No, but I'm very happy that he's there.
Yeah, but anyway, Dr. David Bellamy was a fantastic English kind of explorer. It was like another version of Attenborough, but he doesn't believe in climate change. He got sacked off the BBC for saying that, and you don't hear about him anymore. He's like one of those celebrities that was on all our TV screens growing up. You won't see him being interviewed or being talked about anymore because he completely disputes climate change and global warming. He said it's a myth and it's fake. So that's what happens if you don't toe the line. And I would love to find out if Suzuki's father, who his father was, because I bet you he was in that Japanese Camp 731 genetics experimentation team.
Suzuki was born in 36. Let me check that out.
See if his father
might be failing.
I'm only guessing, but I'm saying he'll come from a line of genetics.
He's Canadian,
Okay, so his father's Canadian as well?
Yes.
Okay, all right. I'm talking about David Suzuki's father.
Okay. In 2004, David Suzuki ranked fifth on the list of final nominees in a CBC television series that asked viewers, to select the greatest Canadian of all time.
Yeah, the greatest Canadian, That's another silliness.
And that person had her child set up a kind of foundation or NGO to finance her trip to Rio. That is something. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
David Suzuki has been caught out with some of his blatant quotes. Like he described humankind as maggots and parasites many times. You know, like he's quite open about his views on the masses. He's definitely bring the population down there for sure. But he speaks with a. It's interesting once you see these guys' writings and what they actually believe in, they suddenly become a lot more sinister because he was a very light, kind of likable guy up until I started reading about what he actually believed in, and then he comes across as like a very nasty person. Same with Attenborough, I think. Attenborough is really chilling the way he talks. And he's been caught faking footage completely, you know, like this. his team, which is some of the best wildlife photographers in the world, admittedly fake half their stuff. I mean, to get a picture of a spider catching a, you know, a frog is a miracle in itself. But they'll deliberately set up a spider and a frog in a cage and film it and, you know, have amazing footage. So you just can't trust anything they're saying either.
Yes.
Yes,
those child actors, clearly the thing is that if you look at who their parents or grandparents or who is financing them, it's fascinating. It's something in and of itself. But
they don't employ strangers. There's no one gets moved into power that's a stranger. They're all related, like politicians, the rich. You know, like if you look at say an actress like Brooke Shields, for instance, that was a very questionable operation in itself. She's related to European royalty, you know, the cousin. She was not just a person that just arrived as an actress. And Brad Pitt and Madonna, first cousins, you know, like these people are all in a network, and they don't use, like Thornburg. His mother and father are both very famous themselves, you know.
In that instance, I also think that the character that we see are kind of the leftover, if you want. You know, the one that were not talented enough to play 10 movies, or you know what I mean, have a great career in that aspect. So they took those and they make them stick to one specific thing where it's pretty easy to give them the text. And their career is not really long in the end, because it's like with everything, as you grow up, you kind of lose the interest of the people. So Suzuki was fascinating because her father, I mean, you knew who her father was. I did not know who that person was.
Oh, he's an icon.
It's a fascinating.
And there he goes.
Icon, like you said. Yes. Another one that you indicated up that I really like was Craig Kielburger. Am I seeing it right?
Kielburger? Yeah, sounds right. Kielburger, yeah.
Kielburger, like the town of Kiel in Germany.
Yeah, he was on 60 Minutes, which was the biggest news media show in North America for a long time before, I guess, it just lost all its people. And it's still on. And 60 Minutes Australia is pretty big, too, I believe. But
60 Minutes Australia is actually doing some really good stuff, though. Like, it surprised me when I watched it. I trust it was more... I don't think anyone watches it or listens to it.
Well,
anymore.
It's on YouTube. I get their updates from YouTube, and it seems like they're always in America. But no, I've watched some of their stuff. It's sensationalistic for sure. But
well, some of their older stuff used to be. I used to watch it and go, you know, it was made up and hype, a lot of hype, like a number of stories. But the ones I did watch recently or a while ago was they caught out that we had a big thing over here. That was a proof that the CIA ran drugs. It was called the Nugent Hand Bank Scam, scandal. And there was a American mercenary, Michael Hand, and an Italian banker started a company here with ex-CIA guys, directors, called Nugent Hand, and they were funneling money from Vietnam and through the heroin money, and it was being funneled back to America as black money. And Nugent committed suicide because he was going to talk or something or other. They found him underneath the Blue Mountain in a car with a very improbable suicide. And Michael Hand disappeared and left the country. Well, 60 Minutes tracked him down. He'd faked his death, and he's got a business selling military knives and contracts to the American military. And they went up and interviewed him. You could see it's the same guy. And you would have thought that would have been front page news the next day, that they'd found this murder. That they got this drug, you know, he had all the key things for a major movie, like CIA mercenaries, drug running, linked with the government, and not a single mention of
Well, they're big on crime
stuff. Play a quick clip, the 3 minutes long of Craig Kielburger.
Sure, go ahead.
Kielburger.
Is the camera mic at this distance? This is the camera mic at this distance. This is low at the farthest possible distance at this point. This is low.
Frank Kielberger was only 12, he decided to take a 7-week trip to South Asia. It was a journey that would have important consequences for the rest of his life. He went with 25-year-old Alam Rahman, his friend and guide. They took a camcorder and made a record of all their experiences to bring back to Canada to show other children. Craig is 15 now. This is the story of his life so far.
The only time I was actually nervous on my trip was that one second when I said, oh God, what am I doing here? I'm 12 years old and I've never taken the subway by myself. But after that, I loved it.
Why did he give you the mail back to you if he was going to school before?
Because of the...
Craig had become concerned about child labor through reading about it back in Canada. Now he wanted to find out everything he could firsthand.
I had a million questions. I could have held a child there for hours and just asked them question after question after question. I wanted to know what it was like working in the conditions, how they felt having to get up each morning and knowing that this was what they were going to do, what their dreams were for the future. I wanted to put myself in their life for a day and to learn exactly what went through their brain, exactly what they thought, and exactly what they hoped, and exactly what they feared.
So what is your name,
Angel? Puri.
Yes.
Those needles that she was sorting through, what are they used for?
Use. They didn't collect the plastics, only they didn't collect this plastic.
What are the needles used for before? What were they used for?
In the hospital, maybe some in the drug addiction.
Is she ever worried about the spread of viruses like AIDS? Because she said she had cut herself before and
cut it off. Yeah, just water. In the water. She won't say get any treatment for them. She won't get any treatment.
And that was a bit of Craig Kielberger.
Another
child lobbyist for, mind you, there's one thing that is a definite thing, the amount of the slave labor they use for these gadgets in China and other countries is a real thing. There's no two ways about that. You know, they bring.
Well, I don't know about slave labor. That's
defined
slave labor. They work long hours.
Well,
and
I'm doing
hard hours.
It's an equivalent. Slave labor, I will consider if you don't make enough money to live with your family. You know, you have such shift that you get to live on the factory itself. And
well, that's what
the
you
factory
know,
will
the
charge
same.
You for housing and food, so in the end
right.
you make less money.
Well, that's
slave labor.
Do you remember what Ben Franklin wrote about when he was on his visits to England in the whatever year it was, 17, whatever, as horror? He's describing the slave labor in the factories. You know, he said people working in boot factories that couldn't afford to wear boots, you know, and children working. And it was, you know, he did some journalism and writings back in the day. But factory labor is a real thing, you know, and whether they're under whatever age they
yes.
are.
But what is funny is that you get this child, Craig Kielberger, working,
yep.
because it is a work, and denouncing child labor, while he is doing child labor himself, because in the end he has people behind him, telling him what to do. He has this kind of handler that we can hear about
yeah.
in the clip.
The only thing about child labor is that money that those children make, whether you agree with children working or not, might help support their families as well. They might have less than nothing if they didn't do anything.
Yes.
So
I guarantee that's exactly the case, because you know what they did to Hanoi and mm-hmm. Saigon in Vietnam. They pushed all of those people, all those remote villages that were everywhere. A thousand different dialects and people
yeah.
were all with the American help of the Americans and Australians and New Zealanders pushed off their land into Saigon, and the by the sound of it, it was just, there was prostitute, you know, child prostitute. The same thing happened in Germany in the 20s and 30s after the First World War. But giant cities, now when you go to Hanoi and places like that, no one's got a car. They all ride motorbikes. So a family owns a motorbike because they can't, you know, the petrol's so expensive. Yeah. And so you see a family of five, and I've got some great photos of, you know, a family of five all on the same scooter, like three little kids and the mother and father all, you know, driving along the road, going, you know, picking the kids up from childcare because they've been working, you know, whatever the shifts are, and it's Sony or factory. I've never seen anything like the factories that they have there with the amount of bikes in the car parks, like 8,000 bikes parked in a great big lot next to a factory for a night shift. So yes, it's a real thing, you know, yeah, in these poor countries. And yeah, we'll be that way, yes, eventually.
And to go back to Kilberger himself, what is fascinating and what is showing the fact that it's a plant and that it's something that is done in purpose, he learned that Jean Chrétien, I really liked the name when I was a child. Every time Jean Chrétien was mentioned, I liked the name of the guy. He was like, okay, let's be
who, good. Who is that?
Jean Chrétien was our prime minister. And yes, he was before. He was a couple prime ministers ago. And he was a populist prime minister. He had Bell's palsy, so he spoke out of the side of his mouth. But he was considered just a friendly, good-natured person that allegedly was a little guy that rose up from very little and made it to the big time.
Why have I never heard of him? Does it say he was the French prime minister from what year?
Yeah, well, you could look him up exactly what year. But he was a pretty big minister under Pierre Trudeau, who was
okay,
our biggest, I would say one of our most famous recent.
Yeah,
While he was in India, he met with Kilberger, which is fascinating, you know what I mean? You are from Canada, you go to India, and you meet this activist that is from Canada and is conveniently enough also in India. Yeah. At first, you don't want to meet him because you don't have the time, the schedule, or whatever. But you find 15 minutes to speak with the king. Because you get to do it. There will be an audio clip played.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Boys and girls,
there'll be nothing but rainforests covering the entire world.
Getting gay with kids is here. Spread the word and bring you cheer.
Yeah.
Getting gay with kids is here. Spread the rainforest, what do you say? It's totally gay.
There's a place called the rainforest that truly sucks ass.
Just knock it all down and get rid of it fast.
You say save the rainforest, but what do you know?
You've never been to the rainforest before. Getting gay with kids is near. Tell you things you might not like to hear. You only fight these causes cause caring spells. All you actors can go fuck yourselves.
That was so inspiring. What a wonderful message. There'll be no more rainforests left in the entire world.
Getting gay with kids is here. Spread the word and bring your cheer.
Yeah.
Getting gay with kids is here. Let's knock down the rainforest. What do you say? It's totally gay.
It is indeed. So what the bumper was trying to say for some strange reason he was cut out was support fakeologist.com for as little as $1.19 or one-time donation via PayPal.
Yes, and GLE, we have to mention you made a nice donation. I really appreciate that. I know you're too proud to mention it, or too modest, rather. But thank you very much for your donation. It's very kind.
Yes, you kind of outed me on that one. So I did make a donation.
And, was that good of you, Jarris? Very good of you.
Very good of him. Yeah. Didn't have to. He's done enough.
He is doing an awful lot. Is that South Park, though, that you just played?
Yes.
Yeah, that was South Park.
And it is not me that played that. It was Gaia. So thank Gaia you very
running
much, Gaia,
me.
For that clip.
Yeah, I have to go shortly because I have to get up and do the fart podcast in the morning. But I thought it was interesting, Jarris, that you posted something, an image on all the ladies, all the girls, rather, that were hanging out with these high-powered leaders with the pigtails and the braids.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know all the girls and all the pictures. I don't know. I know. I think
Chairman Mao.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Trying to find. Where did you post that? In show notes.
It's in general. In general.
Yes, it's in general. And also, if I can say one thing, I posted that, but I since bought a new cell phone, so I don't have the picture at hand. But I did post that on the Far Podcast chat. It was a picture of a braided girl, a girl with kind of a small braid or some kind of hair that is similar to pigtails or braid, if you want, that is laying in a coffin on the mural at the Denver airport.
Oh, wonderful. Well, one of them is Mao and some girl. I don't know if she's...
The other one is Stalin with a little boy.
Stalin and some girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I think that's Goebbels.
Himmler.
Himmler?
Himmler. And that's Obama with
them.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
yes.
I wonder. Thurnberg, yeah, whatever. Thurnberry or Berg.
Thurnberg.
I wanted to look up the significance of pigtail. Well, yeah, pigtails are usually one or two. Well, let me just read here. It's one or two tails. And going in from Wikipedia, it says the hairstyle is extremely popular in Japan, especially in anime and manga and Japanese culture. Traditionally a hairstyle worn by young girls, it has come to represent innocence and is also known as the twin tail or something in Japanese. So there's the significance of a pigtail. And then I wanted to see what the significance of a braid was. And I'm going to look that up.
It's definitely a symbol. It's definitely the symbol of a guy.
If I can give you an example of that symbol in real life, in adult entertainment, pigtails are a symbol of youth and...
Right.
Innocence.
Young.
Innocence.
Yes, innocent.
Yeah, for sure. And also, the fact they're called pigtails, though, is a bit of a giveaway. It might be a bit of a gentle insult. You know,
it's not. It's because it looks like a pig's tail from... you can look up the origin if you believe the origin story. Yes. But the braiding, in Native American tradition, hair is a signifier of one's spiritual practice. Combing represents the alignment of thought. Braiding is the oneness of thought. And tying is the securing of thought. So individual strands of hair are considered individually weak, but when joined in braids, they demonstrate strength in unity. Wow.
There you go. 50 carbon credits to you for spotting that one, Ed. That's
it's symbolism. It's power symbolism, and there's no doubt that Greta Thunberg is heavily engineered.
Oh, for sure. Have you seen the footage of her without the script? Have you watched
that yet? Yes, I posted that.
Oh, fantastic! Have you also seen the one of her the coding with the hat? She's got a woolen hat, and she'll take it off and touch it as soon as she's lost her, when she needs help by the handler, and they quickly cut her off and stop because it's her safety thing is that she grabs a hat. She'll take the hat off.
Oh, so that's that she needs bailing out.
Yeah,
that's her. That's her safety sign.
The safety sign is that. There's the pom-pom head. I listened to a fantastic interview, believe it or not, with David Icke on that. The guy we were talking about that show. The guy with the fat best voice, you reckon, has got the best voice. The American interviewer that does Ground Zero, Clyde Lewis.
Oh, the guy with the deep voice. Yeah.
Now, very interestingly, David Icke said pretty much everything. He's talking about 911, his new book, right? And he pretty much said all of everything. But as soon as he brought up the Dancing Israeli, the art project, Jellison B, Lewis went, the advert music came up and he got cut off. They definitely do not like that story going on mainstream radio.
But the story is just misdirection anyway. I think
it's the proof that they used the place as a, it was empty, the buildings were empty, and they used the helicopter. They were allowed to stand on the same balcony where the jumpers came out of the year before and film themselves jumping around.
All right. But still, it's a sideshow from the main idea of 9/11, which is it was a controlled demolition with fake victims. That might be a little insight into how they filmed the footage. Fine, I'm fine with that.
To me, that's the biggest, and Chris Kendall ringing the New York Death Index the next day are the two of my, like,
I don't think anything tops the Vixen report, sorry. I think the significance of how they built it.
That's good, yeah. And the fireman, the same face being used on a lot of the victims, just photomorphing.
Right, exactly.
That's all part of the victim report.
But
what I'm saying, though, that this is the most common thing that I've ever heard getting people getting shut down, is that they bring up Jellison B. Like, Jan Urban just would not argue with me. He virtually hung up on me.
Yeah. Do you have a link to any of those audios that you just mentioned?
No, I didn't talk to him, so I was online chatting.
I will just play a little clip that is relevant with the 9/11 talk, if you allow me.
They have been called the children of 9/11, youngsters who waited in vain for a parent to come home 10 years ago tonight, or who never knew their lost parent at all. Cynthia Bowers has some of their stories. Cynthia, good evening.
Good evening, Russ. More than 3,000 children under 18 lost their parents on 9/11. 10 years later, many of these youngest victims are coming of age, but still coming to grips with their loss.
Dad, Mom, Jewel, and I miss you. You are forever in our hearts. Rest in peace.
Many of those children were here today, clinging to family members, sharing memories.
Daddy, I love you and miss you. I wish you could see me now.
Getting the chance to touch their loved ones, if only etched in bronze. Peter Negron was one of those. He was just 11 when his dad, a Port Authority project manager, died, a boy torn between grief and a desire to be there for his 2-year-old brother, Austin.
I've tried to teach him all the things my father taught me, how to catch a baseball, how to ride a bike, and to work hard in school.
A heartbreaking 932 children were left behind by the 658 employees of the bond firm Cantor Fitzgerald. 13-year-old CJ lost his dad.
John Gerard Monahan, we love you and miss you. I wish I could have known you better.
Stephanie DeSimone's father, Edward, worked at Cantor, too.
There is not a day that goes by that I don't think about you. You will always be my best friend and my hero. I love you with all of my heart, and I couldn't have ever asked for a greater daddy than you.
10-year-old Nicholas Gorky is one of 108 children born after 9/11.
And my father, Sebastian Gorky, who I never met because I was in my mom's belly. I love you, Father. I love you for loving the idea of having me. You gave me the gift of life, and I wish you could be here to enjoy it with me.
So does Peter Negron, who has grown up before the nation's eyes. At a 2003 memorial, as a thin, shaky teen, he read from the poem Stars.
I like the way they looked down from the sky and didn't seem to mind the way I cried.
Today, a poised 21-year-old college student, Negron, says he still feels a void.
I wish my dad had been there to teach me how to drive, ask a girl out on a date. I hope that I can make my father proud of the young men that my brother and I have become. I miss you so much, Dad.
Many of the young people today said they had wanted their missing parent to be proud of them. Today, I think it's safe to say, Russ, they earned the pride of the nation.
Cynthia Bowers, thank you very much.
Did you hear all those numbers? I mean, I'm sorry.
108.
Every one of them. It's 11-year-old, and then, you know, 632, 632. It's just incredible that how obvious they make this for us.
I love that you will react on that, because I knew you would love those numbers when I found this clip.
I'm just blown away that how obvious they've made this for us.
Yeah. So they sign their fakery. That's what I call it, signature.
It was impossible to speak on that topic without evocating the child of 9/11.
No, did that was good clip.
Did you actually? I picked up that all those kids were lying. They were acting, and they, you know, someone's talking about someone they really, really love. There's a pattern to their voice. They were talking matter of factly about someone. You know, they weren't. There was no one real that they were talking about. They were just talking about characters. Yeah. And the fact that the 11-year-old's father worked for the Port Authority. Now, that was the most dodgy organisation in the entire operation, was the New York Port Authority, because they had half that, more than three quarters of the tower was booked out to them, wasn't it? They were in control of the whole
thing.
That's
true. Anyway, I'll leave you guys. I'll let you. Great show. Good work. I'll see you on the show tomorrow. Have a good night, guys. Thank you.
Good night, mate. Good night.
Yes,
good night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good work, Jarris, and thanks for the donation. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah, you're a champion.
Very good.
Chris.
Yes.
You're going to get more carbon credits.
Come gather round, children. It's high time you learned about a hero named Homer and a devil named Burns. We'll march till we drop, the girls and the fellas. We'll fight till the death or else fold like umbrellas.
Ah, this is the life.
Smithers, get me some strike breakers, the kind they had in the 30s. Full power, Smithers.
So we'll march day and night by the big cooling tower. They have the plant, but we have the power.
Now do classical gas.
Goodbye, Springfield. From hell's heart, I stab at thee. Look at them all through the darkness I am bringing. They're not sad at all. They're actually singing. They sing without juicers. They sing without blenders. They sing without flungers, cap dabblers, and smendlers. Do tell Simpson I'm ready to deal.
Lisa Simpson. So yes, to continue on the topic of child activists, we get Craig Kilburger, which we mentioned with Ab. And I was happy that he was there for a while.
Yeah.
Because that gave me the chance to thank him for bringing those two cases, the Suzuki one and the Greg Kilburger, to my attention. I hope that we speak well enough about those cases. So on to the next one. The next one on my list is Elian Gonzalez. Elian Gonzalez was suggested to me by Cody of Antactivist fame. So thank Cody from the Antactivist. Always a pleasure to speak with him, and he did suggest that one. Another person from IPS, so thank her or him also, suggested that one. Elian Gonzalez was the case of 1999 of a Cuban boy, an 8-year-old boy, that was found, I think it was rolling inside of a tube of plastic floating on the sea. His mother was dead. And it was a custody crisis, and he was sent back to Cuba. And there was an article, a follow-up article, like maybe 10 or 15 years later. And the poor child wanted to go back to the USA and visit New York if he could. So, you know what I mean? Absolute bullshit case. Just the fact that they were saying that the kid was found in a plastic tube makes absolutely no sense. So, great one, that case. Rick, were you aware of that case at the time?
No, I haven't. I may well have been, but I can't remember it offhand. But, I mean, if I sat there, and I actually haven't gone through and dwelled on all the different... Oops, sorry. I haven't dwelled on that question of how many... Because I just know it's been used time after time after time with starting of wars, basically just shifting humans' emotions in these psyops by utilising the innocence. And Ab, that was brilliant.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
In a world so much different than the one you thought you knew, is where you'll find yourself once you've listened to Fakeologist Radio.
That was good. Who did that?
But that was a good one. Yes,
that was good.
Fakeologist.com and
Fakeologist.com.
Fakeologist.com. Special thanks to Rollo, Veloset, and Noise Level, because and you, Rick, also, because you always take the time to speak with me, and always a pleasure.
Yeah, no worries.
Special shout out to you.
Fartpodcast.com. The Fartpodcast.com. We're celebrating our 1 year. We're not really celebrating, it's been a year that we've been together and flying high. We've got no issues, no problems with each other. We could do two a week if we'd like to, but we just don't have everyone's all over the place with work commitments and things like that. Well, not Rollo, but certainly the others. So anyway, but onwards and upwards. Now, but as far as the hairstyle, that what Ab brought up about the unity and innocence of the braiding, is brilliant, because that is the symbology of the whole thing. That makes so much sense, you know, the perfect braid on an angle, you know, she could have had short hair, she could have had spiked hair, but no, it's the braid. And that braid is featured within Chairman Mao, use it, we got Hitler.
Yes,
and
it's a common feature.
And I would say, if you look, and if you go back to your classic, of your Italian Renaissance paintings, you will see the braid featured heavily, you know, and when there was a political turmoil, or, you know, there was some symbol that was being put out there. It'll be there. It'll be everywhere. You know, it's just the thing is, as I say, this is such an obvious operation.
And by the way, if I can just say one thing, do not type pigtail blonde on Google. That will not give the research that you will expect.
Well, you'll end up with a strike against your looking at dodgy sites name probably as well. It probably looks very suspicious too. But anyway, you'd think it would be an innocent thing, but you can't even type. That's why. The whole internet is you know, I've always knew it as, you know, what do nets and webs do? What is a net or a web designed to do? It's designed to catch you or catch things. Yeah, so it's quite obvious that that's, you know, I remember when my little kids were all interested in watching kids shows, which was a long time ago. I googled I put ABC Kids, which was their TV favourite TV channel in the day, the Australian Broadcasting Channel Commission had lots of good kids shows. I keyed it in to normal search engine, right, on the home computer, and straight away it came up with pedophile links, you know, to pictures of children. But, you know, you couldn't see it, but it had, you could click on the link, it would take you into a area. So it was there on mainstream Google back, you know, I guess in 2007, 2008, 2009. Yes. That's what you were being led to. So say a guy was sitting at home that was, you know, exhausted by all the different porn that he'd watched, they would just click on that just as, you know, something different, and bang, they're in there on the register. They're in the network, they're being registered, they're being watched, bang, they're controlled. The
yes.
They're on the web, yes. the camera would be reverse filming them, guaranteed,
yes.
on their computer. And so you know that that's been a regular occurrence that they've done these big sweeps on internet porn and pedophilia, and they've found Houses of Parliament computers in Canberra and England and America. It's one of the major viewing subjects on these politicians' web searches is that kind of stuff.
Yes. To go on the
change the subject,
the topic
sorry.
Of the child. No problem. To go on the topic of the child soldiers of the globalist war. One that might present pretty difficult to get detail or braids on is M. Cosi Johnson, who was a South African children born in 1989 and dead in 1st of June 2001. She was a South African children with AIDS, and she was making a great impact. She brought attention to AIDS and the HIV issue in South Africa. And she was adopted after the death of her mother by someone of high profile. And yes, she was an icon of the fight against AIDS in South Africa. And she brought.
I've never heard of her. Never heard of her. Or maybe I've seen photos, but it's,
yes, once again, it's your find of Gaia. Once again, something that you brought to my attention. Something that can be found in more descriptive term in the Fakeopedia page that I advise everyone to take a look at, because everything I am saying is on that page, one way or another.
Yeah.
Everything. So, of course, there were a lot of books and documentary and stories written about that child, M. Cosi Johnson. Fascinating character. And I will now let Greta Thunberg, if you want, speak a bit more about herself, because she did make some interesting indication at first, but maybe she wasn't quite clear enough, I think. But let's see what she has to say about that, because that is probably pretty fascinating, I think, at least. Just give me an instant, and we are there.
Greta, your first climate strike was a lonely event a little over a year ago, demanding action for climate change. What's your message to world leaders today?
How dare you?
My name is Greta Thunberg.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Let us hear next from Her Excellency Greta Thunberg, Chancellor of Children Around the Globe.
Thank you. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet, you all come to us young people for empty words and fairy tales of a mass extinction. The popular idea of cutting our economic growth in half in 10 years only gives us a 50% chance of setting off irreversible chain reactions of suffering. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams to control the world. You people suck, and all you can talk about is technical solutions and consequences and words of hope. How dare you? I do not want to believe that, because if you really understood how sad and angry I am and still kept on failing to act how I tell you to act, then you would be evil. For more than 30 years, the politics has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away, no matter how sad and angry I am? My sad and angry generation and the IPCC rely on sucking hundreds of billions of gigatons of your money. I want your money. And you are still not mature enough. You have to act how I tell you to act, whether you like it or not. I will be watching you.
Thank you, Your Excellency.
I want it now. Don't care how. I want it now.
You get nothing.
Brilliant. That was one of those voices was the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie. The little girl, the spoilt little one that's father bought the factory full of chocolate to get. What was her name? Veruca Salt. I think it was Veruca. Yes. Yeah, that was her.
There is a saying: the internet wins every time. And the only thing I get to do to find those funny clips that we have the chance to hear of Greta Thunberg voice is type Greta YTP on YouTube.
Greta YTP?
YTP, as in YouTube poop. YouTube poop is a kind of way of messing with a video to make it more funny.
If I had the time, if I had the knowledge, I would be making some hilarious for that woman, that little girl. Yeah. I mean, she's just, you know, the memes you could come up with are just fantastic. I mean, people are already doing it. I mean, it's just the imagery is so blatantly, obviously, part of a dictatorship model anyway. The fact that we can find those pics anyway, it's just basically there'll be mass shadow banning going on over those memes, you know, that they don't want those memes out, particularly the one with the little girls and the dictators, because that one, the meme, a picture is worth more than 1,000 words when it comes to some of these power memes. They really do destroy a whole, they destroy an argument with just looking at it. You go, fuck. Even my brother hadn't responded back to that one. Normally he'll sit there, you know, debating it, but that's a very obvious, powerful image of the, of little girls in pigtails next to famous dictators.
And you also get the different version, if you want, for different market. As in Malala Yousafzai. If you know that girl, Malala.
No. How do you spell it?
Malala.
Malala.
A-L-A-L-A. Malala.
Malala. Malala. No.
Malala won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2004.
Okay, yeah. So you mean the Muslim chick?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. She'll get it. Thunberg will get beat. She's, you know, if Obama, Obama bin Laden got it for fuck all, she'll get it for this, because she's done more work for the Rothschild cartel than anyone else.
Yes. So let's hear the Muslim agent at work.
Okay.
I'm proud. Well, in fact, I'm very proud to be the first Pashtun, the first Pakistani, and the youngest person to receive this award. along with that, I'm pretty certain that I'm also the first recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize who still fights with her younger brothers. I want there to be peace everywhere, but my brothers and I are still working on that. I'm also honored to receive this award together with Kailash Satyarthi, who has been a champion for children's rights for a long time. Twice as long, in fact, than I have been alive. I'm proud that we can work together. We can work together and show the world that an Indian and a Pakistani can work together and achieve their goals of children's rights. Dear brothers and sisters, I was named after the inspirational Malala of Mewand, who is the Pashtun Joan of Arc. The word Malala means grief-stricken, sad. But in order to lend some happiness to it, my grandfather would always call me Malala, the happiest girl in the world. And today, I'm very happy that we are together fighting for an important cause. This award is not just for me. It is for those forgotten children who want education. It is for those frightened children who want peace. It is for those voiceless children who want change. I'm here to stand up for their rights, to raise their voice. It is not time to pity them. It is not time to pity them. It is time to take action. So it becomes the last time that we see a child deprived of education. People describe me in many different ways. Some people call me the girl who was shot by the Taliban, and some the girl who fought for her rights. Some people call me a Nobel laureate now. However, my brother still called me that annoying bossy sister. As far as I know, I'm just a committed and even stubborn person who wants to see every child getting quality education, who wants to see women having equal rights, and who wants peace in every corner of the world.
Boring. But that was Malala Yousafzai, and to accompany us.
What was the huge movie that came out? Was it Slumdog Millionaire?
Yeah.
Is it the movie? Yeah, right. That was about children. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes.
I've never seen it, but it was a huge movie.
I will now play a song that is a right that I think is important for all of us. Let's go.
Now, boys, don't get into any trouble while Mommy and Daddy are gone. And don't make a mess.
Do you like parties?
Yeah.
We can invite all our friends and have soda and pie.
Yeah.
I hope no bad people show up.
Kick it!
listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
No idiots, don't even know where we live.
Fight your right!
Beastie Boys.
Beastie Boys. Excellent.
That's a Rick. So Rick, everything Rick Rubin touches turns to gold, as production wise.
Also,
nothing.
As I've had quite enough of a fat man, anyone who sees Peter Griffin must throw apples at him.
Yeah, I'd like to make a deposit. What the hell?
It's the law, sir.
No, I have no doubt that perhaps there may exist some mild discontent among some of you at the recent changes I have implemented. Lest you be considering any sort of uprising, I warn you, I am quite prepared to make an example of any undesirable elements. And don't think I don't know who you are. As someday it may happen that a victim must be found, I've got a little list of society offenders who might well be underground and who never would be missed. Who never would be missed? There's the white kid with the baggy clothes who's talking like he's black. The girl you date who doesn't get the jokes in Caddyshack. The Asian guy who cuts in front of every single line. And Britney Spears for accidentally showing her vagina. And Bill O'Reilly's ineffective dermatologist. They'd none of them be missed.
He's got them on the list. He's got them on the list. And they'd none of them be missed. They'd none of them be missed.
The guy behind the news reporter waving like a fool. And Senator Bill Frist, I've got him on the list. And the fat kid smiling warmly while he's peeing in the pool. He never would be missed. He never would be missed. There's the foul-smelling boy who comes to school in camouflage. And every bleeding member of the cast of Entourage. And while we're on the subject, HBO deserves a whack for ending The Sopranos with a fucking cut to black. And guys who, when you shake their hand, just bump you with their fist. I don't think they'd be missed. I'm sure they'd not be missed.
He's got them on the list. He's got them on the list. And they'd none of them be missed. They'd none of them be missed.
There's the guy who sits beside you and keeps farting on the plane. And Shakira's lyricist, I've got him on the list. And the smarty on Thanksgiving who says, it's the trip to fame. He never would be missed. He never would be missed. There's the blonde who tells you loudly with a voice just like a knife. You know, someone should do a sitcom based around my life. The guy who watched The Simpsons back in 1994 and won't admit the damn thing isn't funny anymore. And anyone and everyone who's ever
made me miss,
I've got them on the list.
They've none of them be missed.
Hello.
like you were saying, Rick Rubin. Rick Rubin.
Rick Rubin, yeah, he's fantastic. I mean, he did the best stuff, not that I'm a Jay-Z fan, but his production on and Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Johnny Cash, everything. He's just got this good ear for the power stuff. That Family Guy stuff is quite funny, but I don't watch that show because I don't like that. The animation's crappy, and I don't like the voices. The voices are irritating, whereas The Simpsons I could sit and watch all day, every day, and South Park, and laugh my head off. There's something about the Family Guy's animation, and that little baby just annoys me. You know, even though I know a lot of it's good writing and it's funny, but I don't bother watching that show. Yeah, there's just something about that. Is it Seth? What's his name? The main guy. Clever.
That's Mr. Clever Plane on 9/11.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in that. I like the writing's good for sure, and the voice, but it's just not. There's something a bit crass or. Whereas South Park is blatantly out there, really crass, but it's not crass. It's actually very witty, very wittily done. And no matter what the subject they do, those two guys have just got a really good. I like their level that they think at. It's like the way I live life. I don't take too things seriously. I laugh at most things that people will get really upset over.
Yes, and if you really want to have a laugh, I can only advise you to watch Captain Orgasmo, which is the movie by Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
I think I've actually got it. I actually posted something with playing the George Carlin on Saving the Planet onto the live stream chat.
Yes, and that was the next clip.
Oh, good. Yeah,
so you can have to do the introduction for that clip.
There you go. Yeah, I thought that was very good. You know, Carlin's observational humour, as Rollo was putting it the other day, is basically telling the truth, and people laugh, but he's actually just telling you the truth. So it's,
In a second. Okay. Let's finish your point. Because I have a tendency to cut you out to play your
job. No. Well, anyone that can cut me out is doing a fucking good job, because I can keep talking. I can talk underwater. The wave of it's coming. There's a bounce back with Dave Chappelle coming back with his Sticks and Stones thing, which is critically panned but widely watched. So many people I know have watched it all over the place. That Chappelle's he's an unstoppable force because he's the right. If he was white, forget about it. That guy would be fucking history.
Yes, but one thing to say about Dave Chappelle, he's not Dave Chappelle anymore. Shout out to the IPS guy, Dave Chappelle is a clone.
They reckon... Fuck it. there you go. I still haven't managed to listen to that, because I do iTunes, right, and I can't get their podcast does not... It says it's there, but nothing plays, so...
Yes, and to be honest, even though
I don't know if he'd be bothered.
He did send a message to Tim Osman himself, and he
sounds pretty good. I've heard him come on the fakeologist.com talk. Good. He's got a good
The invite is still out for anyone from his crew to come here and discuss a bit.
That's beautiful. Nailed it.
Who was that?
It was their butt.
Okay, it's a beautiful nail that sounds like Rollo.
Yes, it is Rollo.
There you go. All right, we'll play. I need to go as well because I need to finish my job. My chatting slows me down by 50%, so I'm behind, and I've got to get back home to think of things, funny things to say tonight. good chatting to you. And we leave it, go out with. The greatest George observational Carlin. Humorist, George Carlin, the late George Carlin. Yes. Okay, good night and goodbye.
Thank you very much. Fartpodcast.com, support them.
And fakeologist.com, send some money. Send them some money. Thanks, guys. Garris and Guy, the production man, fantastic, mate. Doing a good job.
Yes.
Over now.
And George Carlin it is.
See, I'm not one of these people who's worried about everything. You got people like this around you. Country's full of them now. People walking around all day long, every minute of the day, worried about everything. Worried about the air, worried about the water, worried about the soil. Worried about insecticides, pesticides, food additives, carcinogens. Worried about radon gas, worried about asbestos. Worried about saving endangered species. Let me tell you about endangered species, all right? Saving endangered species is just one more arrogant attempt by humans to control nature. It's arrogant meddling. It's what got us in trouble in the first place. Doesn't anybody understand that? Interfering with nature. Over 90%, way over 90% of all the species that have ever lived on this planet, ever lived, are gone. Wait, they're extinct. We didn't kill them all. They just disappeared. That's what nature does. They disappear these days at the rate of 25 a day. And I mean regardless of our behavior. Irrespective of how we act on this planet, 25 species that were here today will be gone tomorrow. Let them go gracefully. Leave nature alone. Haven't we done enough? We're so self-important. So self-important. Everybody's going to save something now. Save the trees. Save the bees. Save the whales. Save those snails. And the greatest arrogance of all, save the planet. What? Are these fucking people kidding me? Save the planet? We don't even know how to take care of ourselves yet. We haven't learned how to care for one another. We're going to save the fucking planet? I'm getting tired of that shit. Tired. I'm tired of fucking Earth Day. I'm tired of these self-righteous environmentalists, these white bourgeois liberals who think the only thing wrong with this country is there aren't enough bicycle paths. People trying to make the world safe for their Volvos. Besides, environmentalists don't give a shit about the planet. They don't care about the planet. Not in the abstract, they don't. You know what they're interested in? A clean place to live. Their own habitat. They're worried that someday in the future they might be personally inconvenienced. Narrow, unenlightened self-interest doesn't impress me. Besides, there is nothing wrong with the planet. Nothing wrong with the planet. The planet is fine. The people are fucked. Difference. Difference. The planet is fine. Compared to the people, the planet is doing great. It's been here 4.5 billion years. Did you ever think about the arithmetic? Planet has been here 4.5 billion years. We've been here, what, 100,000? Maybe 200,000? And we've only been engaged in heavy industry for a little over 200 years. 200 years versus 4.5 billion. And we have the conceit to think that somehow we're a threat? That somehow we're going to put in jeopardy this beautiful little blue-green ball that's just a-floating around the sun? The planet has been through a lot worse than us. Been through all kinds of things worse than us. Been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, continental drift, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, the magnetic reversal of the poles, hundreds of thousands of years of bombardment by comets and asteroids and meteors, worldwide floods, tidal waves, worldwide fires, erosion, cosmic rays, recurring ice ages, and we think some plastic bags and some aluminum cans are going to make a difference? The planet isn't going anywhere. We are. We're going away. Pack your shit, folks. We're going away. And we won't leave much of a trace either. Thank God for that. Maybe a little styrofoam. Maybe. Little styrofoam. Planet will be here and we'll be long gone. Just another failed mutation. Just another closed-end biological mistake. An evolutionary cul-de-sac. The planet will shake us off like a bad case of fleas. A surface nuisance. You want to know how the planet's doing? Ask those people at Pompeii who are frozen into position from volcanic ash. How the planet's doing. Want to know if the planet's all right? Ask those people in Mexico City or Armenia or 100 other places buried under thousands of tons of earthquake rubble if they feel like a threat to the planet this week. How about those people in Kilauea, Hawaii, who build their homes right next to an active volcano and then wonder why they have lava in the living room? The planet will be here for a long, long, long time after we're gone, and it will heal itself, it will cleanse itself, because that's what it does. It's a self-correcting system. The air and the water will recover, the earth will be renewed, and if it's true that plastic is not degradable, well, the planet will simply incorporate plastic into a new paradigm, the earth plus plastic. But Earth doesn't share our prejudice towards plastic. Plastic came out of the Earth. The Earth probably sees plastic as just another one of its children. Could be the only reason the Earth allowed us to be spawned from it in the first place. It wanted plastic for itself. Didn't know how to make it. Needed us. Could be the answer to our age-old philosophical question, why are we here? Plastic. Assholes. So, the plastic is here, our job is done, we can be phased out now, and I think that's really started already, don't you? I mean, to be fair, the planet probably sees us as a mild threat, something to be dealt with, and I'm sure the planet will defend itself in the manner of a large organism, like a beehive or an ant colony can muster a defense. I'm sure the planet will think of something. What would you do if you were the planet trying to defend against this pesky, troublesome species? Let's see, what might... viruses. Viruses might be good. They seem vulnerable to viruses. And viruses are tricky, always mutating and forming new strains whenever a vaccine is developed. Perhaps this first virus could be one that compromises the immune system of these creatures. Perhaps a human immunodeficiency virus, making them vulnerable to all sorts of other diseases and infections that might come along. And maybe it could be spread sexually, making them a little reluctant to engage in the act of reproduction. Well, that's a poetic note. And it's a start. And I can dream, can't I? Gotta worry about the little things. Bees, trees, whales, snails. I think we're part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. Higher order. Call it what you want. You know what I call it? The big electron. The big electron.
Whoa. Whoa. Whoa.
It doesn't punish. It doesn't judge at all. It just is. And so are we. For a little while. Thanks for being here with me for a little while tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, New York City. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. And take care of somebody else. Thank you. Good night.
So that was George Carlin, and it's been going on for 2 hours now. And I have a tendency to fade at around that hour, so I will do my best to wrap up in the best manner possible. In the end, it's all on the Fakeopedia page that you can consult, because I did realize that we did not do that much of backstory about Greta Thunberg, and it is a shame, because... I did a fantastic investigative work on that, so it's all on the freaking Fakeopedia page, so please, watch it, read a bit, you will learn a lot more about everything that was said tonight, and even things that were not said, because I'm not perfect, I did miss quite a few things that were on the Fakeopedia page, so let's go over a few of New Generation 1, and after that I will mention the first one, if you want, the precursor, the original one, and we will wrap this up, but I do realize that we have a bumper coming, so I will continue to speak. The first one I wanted to speak about is Nujood Hali. Nujood Hali, the case was in 2008 in Yemen, she was 10 years old, and she was an advocate against child marriage, and she has the sad privilege to be the youngest divorcee ever, at least that we know.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
So, Nujood Hali has the sad honor to be the youngest divorcee ever, at least that we know of.
So let's go on from the 2010s. So in 2016, we have Bana El Habed. In Syria, she's 7 years old. She was in 2016 at least, and she was a criticizer of the Assad regime and particularly the bombing of Aleppo, the city she was living in with her parents that were managing said Twitter account. Fascinating story. She did also send a few tweets criticizing Vladimir Putin of all people. She was pretty aware of what was happening for 7 years old. Next one on the list, Ahed Tamimi. I hope I'm not butchering the name. Case of 2017, hilarious video. I can only advise you to watch this one. It's a 17 years old, very whitish looking girl that is slapping an Israeli soldier. On camera, of course. Fascinating video. Incredible one, hilarious. I don't know if you like violence, but watch it, it's funny. So the last one, the last but not the least, probably discussed a lot on fakeologies.com already, David Hogg, famous from the Parkland shooting of 2018. He was 17 years old at the time. His parents were working at CNN at one point in their life. He rose to prominence and he was very, very, very in the public eye at one point in 2018. It is fascinating character, fabricated, very, very eloquent and well-spoken, reading from a text, but not that much to say about that one. That one was addressed, and I will do my best to find something more about that one in the sense that I will try to link you in the show notes to the Fakeologist audio chat episode that mentioned this guy. And in the end, you also get to do the research yourself. I can do my best, and I did my best for 2 hours it is right now. So whatever, I wanted to go to one or two last points, because there is one or two things that I did forget to go over, or lack the time, or wanted to listen to Ab or Rick, whatever. The fact is that communist and fascist are two of the political systems that really understand the importance of children, and did set up some youth organization pretty early on. So I will not do the list of them, find it for yourself. Just know that Chinese, Russian, and German totalitarian system have in common to have set up child organization to take control of the youth and get some kind of little political commissar to send all around the country to discover new things. And that is also one thing that was mentioned in a private conversation with Gaia, that the Chinese government is sending many, many children, 10 million students, they are not children anymore, but 10 million students to the countryside to learn the trade, to ameliorate the way they are doing, and also probably to educate politically a bit the inhabitants of the citizen of the place that they are sent to. So that was a bit of history. The communists and the fascists are the ones that are at the top of that, well organized and well on that. So, to end up this fascinating chat, thanks again to Rick, Gaia, and Fliegenfurt, because in the end he tried to speak, just it was not possible. And I wanted to have a different dynamic, not that I don't like the guy, but something different. So, last point will be David Lubin, or Lubin, or Lubin. Let's say it's Lubin, because it's easier for me to say Lubin, and it is 3:20. In the end, it's my show, I can say Lubin. David Lubin, born the 10th of June 1849 and dead on the 1st of January 1919, for the fanatic of number, was a merchant and agriculturalist. He was pivotal in founding the International Institute of Agriculture in 1908 in Rome. He was born in Klodawa, Poland. His family moved to England in 1853. On his father's death, David's mother married again and they emigrated to America. He received a scant education and at an early age was placed in a jewelry factory in Attleboro, Massachusetts. Yes, because a scant education and then placed in a jewelry factory. The best work you could find at the time, you know what I mean? Not mining, not something horrible, a jewelry factory. So I'm not very informed on the jewelry business, but I don't really think that it entailed the dangerous chemical or things of that nature. So he was placed in a jewelry factory in Attleboro, Massachusetts. I'm sorry. In his new vocation of farmer, there came to him the idea of an international agricultural congress. Yes, that one was for QR. International Agricultural Congress. You hear that one? I say that pretty quickly, pretty greatly, I would say. International Agricultural Congress, whereby one side of the globe might learn that the other side was producing and all that was cost. He began collecting statistics on the subject, studied plant life and domestic animals, and made investigations into their disease and sought remedies. His son, Simon, helped him develop a proposal for an international chamber of agriculture. In 1896, David Luber moved to Europe to implement the proposal. In Italy, in 1904, King Victor Emmanuel III saw the need for such an institution and gave it his ardent support, giving a building for the Congress and an annual income of $60,100. In May 1908, the International Institute of Agriculture, the IEA, IIA, opened in Rome. The institute's goals were to help farmers share knowledge, produce systematically, establish a cooperative system of rural credit, and have control over the marketing of their produce. At the first gathering, 40 nations were represented. In 1906, Luber was appointed the permanent U.S. delegate to the IEA. In 1913, the year of the establishment of the Federal Reserve, in 1913, so it is, on the occasion of the meeting of the Congress in Rome, Mr. Luber received the Silver Cup as a token of appreciation of his effort in originating the organization. Yes. Thank you, Gaia, for reading that one. You would never think I would have read that one out loud. So, in the occasion of the meeting of the Congress in Rome, Mr. Luber received a Silver Cup as a token of appreciation in his effort in originating the organization. Bam. By 1919, 53 nations were represented at the EEA gatherings. The Western Jewish History Center of the Judah L. Magnus Museum in Berkeley, California, has a large collection of paper, correspondence, publication, and photographs of David Luber. In addition, Luber wrote essays and treatises. His novel, Let There Be Light, proposed a universal world religion. And all the things that I just read out loud were written by Gaia on the Fakeopedia page. It is a point that he wanted me to make out loud, because he helped me a lot in the production of that episode. And I would have hated myself if I had forgotten to mention that one. And I already hate myself too. Forgotten to mention so many points that was made during the week in that specific topic, but it was a great chat. I really enjoyed it, and I did my best. I give it my all. It is the best I could have done on that topic. The main point we missed was the backstory of Greta Thunberg, but all is on the Fakeopedia page. Thank you, everyone. Support fakeologies.com, fartpodcast.com. Thank everyone that take the time to listen. Thank Rick, Gaia, thank Fakeologist, thank myself, because fuck, I did an excellent job. And I will now find something quite good to listen to, and maybe close the show with something good, or music or something. Let me take a minute to think about something good.
Stanley!
Because you know what?
Stanley, oh my God, baby! Oh, you're okay!
Hey, Mom.
It's all right, Stanley. We're going to go home and talk about this with your dad. And we will get through this as a family. Come on, get in the car.
Dude, what's that stand on that?
Stanley, well, do you want to tell your father about what happened at school today?
I flunked my math quiz.
No, the other thing.
What other thing? What happened at school today?
Oh, the school shooting?
Yes, the school shooting!
Oh, yeah, some kid shot up the school.
Who shot up the school? Was it you?
No.
Did you get shot?
No.
Oh. Well, what's this about failing a math quiz?
Are you serious? Did you not hear what your child said? Kid died at his school!
Sorry, Sharon,
Why are you all acting like this is normal? What is wrong with you people?
What's up, Mom's at?
Hey, Sharon, you doing okay?
No, I'm not okay! Children were shot! They were killed at a school where they were supposed to be safe!
Uh-huh. What else is going on?
Why does there need to be anything else? Are you
kidding? I'm sorry, Sharon.
Why isn't anyone else emotional?
Hon, when was your last... I mean, you know how sometimes things can seem like a little bigger deal because, you know, Del Mar...
Don't you dare suggest that I'm only emotional because...
I'm just pointing out that it is around that time.
Get out, Randy! I'm not overreacting!
Okay, love you, honey. I'll leave you alone. Well, another 3 days of this, probably.
3 days if you are a lucky bastard. So, yes. In the end, that was my modest contribution to that topic. I will now leave you with a song that I really like and... Je vais prendre congé de tout le monde et vous souhaiter une excellente soirée et une encore meilleure nuit. J'espère que chacun d'entre vous a apprécié cet épisode. J'ai vraiment fait de mon mieux, j'ai pris beaucoup de temps. J'ai produit la plupart de tout ça moi-même. Les seuls clips qui ont été proposés par quelqu'un d'autre l'ont été par Gaïa, qui a été assez gentil pour me proposer tous ces dessins animés que vous avez pu entendre. And let's now hear this song. Bye everyone.
That's all, folks.